Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Another Monday evening. And of course, Edwin is with me once again. Edwin, how are you going?
Just barely, Martin. Just barely with you. This technology, I'm not as up to date or as astute as you are, Martin, with all your cables and your angle switches.
Oh, well, you know, it's one of those things. We're so reliant on technology that when it doesn't quite go as you expect, it creates all sorts of problems, doesn't it? But anyway, good to know that we've connected and looking good. And I wonder how the new year is looking. Is it looking good too?
Well, look, for me, it's the, you know, we coined it last week, right? We coined it as the year of opportunities. And we're also going to say, don't just talk about it, do it. We got to go out and take the opportunities. I don't believe at this point in time, with all the magic balls that we look at, things aren't getting any better. So as much as you've got all this rhetoric about these announceables, as you call them, about the slowing down of immigration, the question is it really going to happen, or how are they going to swing it a different way or call it a different thing and just continue the floodgates to stay open? All I know is that from our perspective and what we're seeing on the, talking to the groups, connecting with the different groups, and now we're also focused with the new kids on the block, the Vietnamese community, that now that we've got a team member on board, and we're just looking to see what they're doing, what they're saying, and how they're preparing for 2024. And from what we can see, nothing's changed in their minds. I know a lot of people expect to see numbers change. There's commentary about numbers already. Different publications calling the surging numbers already, that which we'll speak about later on. But look, for me, at the end of the day, Martin, it's really a year where, or a period of time, particularly for this first quarter, to really watch the numbers carefully, watch the markets carefully, because as you and I keep on saying, there are markets within the market, and they're acting totally different than each other. In some cases, they could be right next door. You could have LGAs right next door to each other, and they're reacting and acting totally different because of the demand and the demographics that are either moving into the area or moving out from the area. So unfortunately, for now, the numbers that we saw last year, and we spoke about last year, was the numbers that we saw in 2022 2023 were a lot lower than what they were in 22. So the first of 2024. We remain a lot lower, almost 2,000 listings on market in Sydney, lower than the previous start of the year. So it's really a watch this space.
Yeah, it is interesting, Edwin, and a couple of observations. There seems to be a disconnect between what some of the property portals have been saying and what we're seeing, firstly. Although, did you see the AFR... published a whole series of forecasts of where people thought prices would be over the next 12 months. And basically, at one end, you had, 4, 5, 6% higher or more. And the other end, you had down to minus 3 or minus 5 or something, right? Shane Oliver at AMP and our friend Lou Christopher were down the bottom end, and some of the property portals were up the top end, which was maybe no surprise. But the other point, interestingly, of course, Chalmers came out, and I think he's living in a parallel universe, in Alice in Wonderland, where, he's saying that everything's fine in the economy and, we've got a few issues, but nothing major. It's so different from what I'm seeing. low listings numbers. The mortgage stress numbers are up again, and I'm going to run a show tomorrow on that live to be able to explore that further. So there does seem to be a bit of a disconnect, and therefore, you know, you've got to sort of make your own way, I suppose, which is what you're saying. You know, you've got to try and take advantage of what may be happening. And I also think, sorry to, you know, say the same thing again, but you cannot take these high level numbers as being anything useful. You have to go granular and look at the information down on the ground. And of course, that's one of the benefits of this chat, because we do actually go granular and look at what's really happening.
Yeah, look, this is the thing, right? And this is what we keep on saying over and over again. We talk in general terms because, I mean, if we were going to talk about each specific suburb in Sydney, you're talking about 636 or something suburbs in Sydney, or 32, 34 LGAs. So it'll be a long conversation when it comes to numbers on that are appearing on market. But look, as we're saying, the LGAs are acting totally different because of the pressure that real estate agents are under at the moment. There's a lot of pressure out there for real estate agents to survive. They've been doing it hard in terms of listings and in terms of sales. If there's no for sale listings, well, then there's no commission. If there's no commission, they can't pay for their own mortgages, and they can't keep the doors open as well. So small business operators, they're struggling. So when we were speaking about the similar situation that the industry was in, was deja vu 2019 before the government, the huge government bailout, not only of the real estate industry, but also other industries along the line, because of the lockdowns and the JobKeeper and so forth. So this is why we said now, a lot of people make a lot of commentary about different areas. Then you find the mainstream publications talking about a surge in numbers. The Inner West experienced 150% increase in numbers. Yeah, of course it's going to be 150% increase when you've got two listings. You go from two listings on market to five listings on market or 10 listings on market, and it's going to be, when you talk percentages, it's going to reflect exorbitant numbers. But you've got to look granular. You've got to look at the reasons why certain markets are acting in a certain way. Like I can tell you now, Martin, that and I can tell our audience, we alluded to it very late last year in the last or second last podcast of 23. I said, watch this space, because at the moment there's a feud going on between McGrath Real Estate and Ray White. As well as a couple of other independents in the Blacktown LGA. I mean, they're going hell for leather. They're knocking on doors. They're doing whatever it takes. And I was watching the numbers on market coming on market in the Blacktown LGA, and I was watching it, just about every hour, on the dot as to the changes in the listing numbers. And on the 25th of December, this is the 25th of December and the 26th of December, right? Christmas Day and Boxing Day, you had 46 new listings came on market that were bought on market by McGrath and Ray White in the Blacktown LGA. Now, I know the background to that story. I know the background as to why, and that's because McGrath have bought another local agency in the Blacktown LGA, and they bought out Skibera's real estate to bring into their fold, because they're losing a lot of ground to McGrath, losing a lot of ground to Ray White, losing a lot of ground to a couple of the other players in there in Manor, as well as Stone. So this is what we say. You've really got to look. There's more to what the mainstream presents. So you could theoretically say, well, there was a surge in numbers, for sale listing numbers in the Blacktown LGA, blah blah. But what's the background? What is the background? What is the story? But at the end of the day, Martin, what I'm also seeing is that the bloody listings that have come on market, that they're asking a lot more than what they were asking before as well. So this is where people have got to really be careful. You've got to really break things apart. And as you've said before many a times, you know, you've also got to see what, you know, how the dog box, some of these dog boxes or dog kennels are being presented as showroom renovations, showroom renovated properties, and people are falling for it. This is what we say. You've just got to be careful. But we present a generalized you know, view as well, because you know, it's really only an hour or so of podcast, and there's only so much that we can share, and we try to share as much as we can.
Right. Well, we'll have to do a 24-hour version of our podcast when we go through each postcode and LGA, right? I mean, I have more than 2,000 postcodes in my database, right? And I can tell you that the dynamics in those, you know, 2,000 are actually somewhat different from each other. So it's very difficult to talk generalities. One of the reasons why tomorrow night I'm going to focus more on the individual postcodes. But, you know, there's a lot going on. And I thought this was a really interesting thing that you highlighted, Edwin, you know, because be careful what you buy, right? Because this is an example where, well, it looks as though the council's actually taking, you know, uncertificated building seriously.
Well, this is a litigation with Fairfield Council that's been going on for years. Currently, the developer slash builder is in jail. I haven't done a full background research on this whole thing. This was brought to my attention by our Vietnamese group, because one of their members filmed that lives across the road from this property. Happened around mid-December, where the actual council got access to the dwellings and knocked them down. So this is where a triplex in Fairfield got built without a DA, not even under CDC, nothing. It just got built. The owner of the block is like, hey, I feel like building a triplex. Let's go for it. It wasn't until they lodged papers in the council to request for allotments or lot numbers that it all came to a head, and then it went into litigation. It took years, but there are a lot of questions that obviously you and I, part of it we've discussed in previous podcasts as well, but there's a lot of other questions, you know, and they all center around how in the hell, because of what I have done is I have looked at some listing ads for sale. I'd like to know how the hell these things got sold. And this is what I keep on saying, where a lot of the conveyances or solicitor slash conveyances are not paying a lot of attention to what the clients or the contracts that the clients are bringing to the table for them to vet, because you know there's that they charge very little, in my opinion, for what they do. But at the same time, if you're going to charge very little, well, you know, charge, you know, but still you expect that if they're going to say they're going to charge, let's say $1,500, well, if that's all you want to charge, but you want to get a job well done, but they don't. For that reason, they think they charge very little. They don't up their fees because that market is so competitive in conveyancing. You can get conveyancing done for as much as $1,200, $1,300, and you can also pay solicitors to do it for $3,000. This is one of the alarming things is the lack of due diligence by different professionals along the chain of the sale of the purchase. And the other thing that's obviously alarming to me, and I'll be voicing it a lot louder and making a lot more noise over 2024, is the fact that real estate agents are selling properties. In my opinion, it's non-disclosure of material fact that they're selling properties that have been renovated, have been built without DA approvals, without occupation certificates, without CDC compliances, without any form. And you know what? They just shrug their shoulders, Martin, and they get away with it because of the demand. They're getting away with shitty rentals for the same reason, But in the space of buying and selling, which I mean, you're no longer talking $350,000 to buy a house or a triplex in Fairfield. Yeah, you're talking upwards of $1 million. So it's not small change. So, and this is where all these checks and balances need to happen. So although this highlights a whole triplex development that may have cost the individual a few million dollars, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of other properties that got sold in 2023, 2022, 21, and prior, where where agents themselves don't know whether the extensions to dwellings are council approved. They don't ask the question because they don't want to know, because if they aren't council approved, well, theoretically they're meant to disclose it, but they don't want to disclose it. So they go by, don't tell me, what I don't hear, I don't need to repeat, and so forth. And it's a shame. And the New South Wales government needs to bring this into line.
Absolutely. And, we've said consistently, Edwin, that you can't rely on what the agent is saying, and you can't rely on the documentation from the vendor, particularly, the survey. You need to do your own due diligence. Interesting, couple of stories here. When I was looking to buy down in Illawarra, we actually looked at quite a few properties. And the first one we actually was interested in was just down the road from Thirroul. And interestingly, we were quite interested until we discovered that they had put up a huge garage behind the property, massive. And in fact, that was not actually council approved at all. So the council didn't know about it. And the agent professed that he knew nothing about this. We could have walked ourselves into a situation where later that might have been demolished or need to be demolished potentially because the fact council found it. And even our own property, the one we actually bought, when we actually looked at the plans that were approved, the internal layout was dramatically different from what we actually got. So even in the one we bought, what the council thought was there on our land and what we actually ended up buying was quite different. And luckily it was relatively cosmetic, so the layout of the stairs and things like that. But even so, there's a risk, isn't there? If what the council think you're actually holding and what you're actually holding is different, well, they do have the right ultimately to knock on your door and say, yeah, excuse me.
Well, I've been banned from, I can tell you now, and I'll say it publicly, I've been banned from attending open house inspections from an agency in Hunters Hill because I've questioned their the properties that they've been selling that my client's being interested in with regard to unlawful dwellings or what was once considered a garage turned into a granny flat and so forth, and without council approvals or without any approval whatsoever. So not fit for purpose, like fit for use. Fit for purpose was when it was a garage, built to the boundary and so forth. I got told point blank, don't come to open house inspections. So Dusty goes to those now, or I get Evan to go at the end of the day. But see, this is the shit that goes on, man. This is great. And that's not the only house. There was another one that we were bidding for, but we pulled out on the day of the auction because our client just didn't feel comfortable, as much as we told them that there were certain things that weren't kosher with the property that we sorted out. There was a lot of issues in the subfloor area, let alone with the cabana slash granny flat that was built at the back that, probably back in the 70s, when the house was originally built. Once again, it was a rear yard garage because it was built to the boundary. But then since then, it's been converted in the last 15 years into a cabana slash granny flat. And again, as I keep on saying, and as shared one of the tips last year was, If you see an extra dwelling, if you see something that doesn't necessarily line up or doesn't appear to be to be of the same nature of material that the original dwelling was built with, tell your conveyancer, tell your solicitor, so they can make proper checks and balances with the council. The building inspector won't tell you. They'll just inspect the building. They'll just inspect certain sections of the building. They're not going to go there and research whether there was a DA lodged or whether it was built under CDC. And the agents won't tell. The agents say, "Yeah, look, it's been here for 20 years. The owner bought it as is, and it's all okay. It's all okay until one of the neighbors that you don't end up getting along with dobbs you into the council, and then you'll get like in this case, you'll get a demolition order, and you can whistle Dixie till the cows come home, because that's it. If it's unlawful, it's unlawful, and unless you can do what we call a reverse feasibility, sorry, a reverse DA on the dwelling, then good luck. Good luck, because that is more complicated than getting anything done. And if it's not to code, or if it's, as I said, if it's a garage converted into a granny flat and it sits on the boundary, well, you're already screwed as it is, because there are certain codes, and you'll be told to convert it back to the garage. And in many cases now, from you can say from a the western suburbs right up to the North Shore, there are certain values attached to extra dwellings that are approved on property. So I mean, look at the cost of building a granny flat now. So if you can boast, or if you can list your property to say that, look, I've got a not generous block of land, 800 750 square meters with a granny flat, well, look, you can ask, that granny flat, whether it was built 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that granny flat, by virtue, and if it was properly built and sanctioned by the local council, well, then that granny flat could be worth anything from added value to the block of land, anything from $200,000 to $350,000. So you pay that, and then 3 months, 6 months down the track, because you pissed off your neighbor, because they don't like you because of the different food that you cook, and they don't like the food that you cook, and you piss them off, well, then guess what? They're going to dob you into the council, and council going to come knocking on your door, and you've pissed $350,000 into the wind.
Absolutely. And there's such a shortage of supply of properties, as we've said. Listings are very low, and migration, of course, is one of the factors in the mix here, more people coming into the country. But we've got a couple of people who might watch our shows.
Well, this is it. This is the week, right? This is how the week begins. You got this news of this demolition order and a video of the demolition of a triplex in Fairfield. And I'll follow Elon on X, and he's talking about. I reckon he's been watching our shows, mate. I'm convinced. I'm convinced he watches our shows. Who knows? He may be eyeing out some Sydney property by the harbour. Who knows? Or he might be coming up to the mountains. But if he does come up to the mountains, I'll pick a bone with him, because the internet's not as fast as it's meant to be. But hopefully it'll improve. But yeah, look, that's what's happening in the Western world, right? And obviously our government's all for it. And this is what I'll say, how will they disguise it moving forward? How will they disguise the future migrants moving forward? Because from what we can see, a lot of the people that are coming in, and what we're told from the different groups, they're coming in with a lot of money, and they're focused on buying. And as I say, it will take them 3 months, 6 months, 12 months to settle down and figure out where they do want to live, and also where the money they've brought in and the job that they're going to get is going to and where the better schools that they want to send their children to are. So this is it, Martin. This is what we're doing on one side of the fence. Obviously, Elon's looking at the other side of the fence, or should I say the other side of the wall there, and where you've got a different group of people. I know a lot of families, or I know of a lot of families and a lot of people from my part of South America who've made that hike up to Mexico and move forward. And people that are looking for a better future. But the ones that we're getting, and the ones that Elbow and Co. Real Estate Partners are looking for, are ones with money that they can pump into businesses and buy real estate, because the politicians don't want their properties to go down in value.
Well, spot on. And look, here's proof, right? This is one that you posted the other day. Everyone asks me if I have free capital, can I invest anything in NSW located? Thanks in advance. So I'm not sure what language that is, but it's certainly interesting.
Yeah, look, it's Vietnamese. This is from the new group that I'm involved with, and these are some of the posts that they put up. There's a lot of money. There is a lot of money, and obviously there's a lot of cash floating around as well. And when you get to a certain amount, there's only so many. I guess you can buy a fancier car, but I think in this case, from our fellow there in the group, he's showing us that there's a growing appetite for established homes from individuals in the southwestern region, because of the demand, once again, because of the immigration influx and the demand to rent out rooms for cash. I mean, a single bedroom in Cabramatta, for example, you could rent a single bedroom out for in an apartment for about $250 a week, and I'm talking about apartments that were probably built in the 1950s or 60s, and they look like crap, or you can pay right up $300-$350 a week. This is for a single bedroom, Martin, and obviously they get paid in cash. And this is what we've been saying: there's a big difference in the hunger for the WeChat chatterers, the new kids on the block, and also now the Silent Tigers, because these are ethnic groups that have an appetite for room letting, but also they know that the communities that are coming over as migrants, whether it be students or some sort of working visa, they know that they will occupy, they will rent out bedrooms, they will rent out in cash. Case in point, the majority of the Asian students, that's what they've been doing, that's what they've had to do. And if they're over here to study, it's because the families abroad have got a lot of money. So obviously the WeChat chatterers are more open and we're looking more for that, because they can not only get paid in cash, but they can also get paid through the WeChat wallet over, and the money can go directly to the owners of the properties, families in directly in China. So they're totally bypassing the economy, right? Totally bypassing the taxable aspect of our economy. And I guess that's another reason why they want us to go digital, so that they can control the cash. But overall, Martin, it's from what we're seeing thus far, is that there's a hunger the chatter in all the different groups, and from the different meetings that we've had, the different conversations that we've been having. They're very focused, still very focused on buying. So it's fingers crossed on the for sale listing numbers across Sydney.
Yeah, and you make another interesting point as well, that the FIRB, which tries to report foreign transactions, well, there's plenty of evidence that people are skirting the FIRB, and creating up companies and trusts, et cetera, and friends and families, all designed to get round what the FIRB says.
Yeah, so this was a report on WeChat that Dusty translated for me. And they're talking about what was I found interesting was what they were talking about in that report about the amount of money that foreign investors or Chinese investors had bought into the economy. And that was a report put out by the from the FIRB and obviously from the figures that they've got. But interestingly, what they in this article that you see there in part of that article or the rest of that article that Dusty was sharing with me, they also talk about in the comments below that article there, they're talking about, yeah, that's what's registered with the FIRB, but that's not, that doesn't include. So the extra billion Australian dollars that came in as for foreign from foreign investors buying property in Australia, that's what's, you know, what's being, you could say what's being regulated, and what's not is the different entities which foreign investors can buy under, which I've been talking about for since 2012, 2013, and that is even earlier than that, and that is you can buy through trusts, you can buy through companies, you can and many I mean it's being shared openly that they'll get friends and family to buy on their behalf, and they will hold the person that's got PR, whether it be a family member or whether it be a friend of the family, they will hold that property. They'll buy it under their name, and they will hold it for the people. This is the level of trust that they have. It's hard for the Aussie mind to think, how could you give, you know, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 4 million to a friend or a family member to buy and keep it on in your name, but keep it on their behalf as they try to get PR, as they try to make the way into Australia. But that's what they do. We know syndicates in Sydney. There are three syndicates that we converse with on a regular basis. And the individuals from each syndicate are managing from this is money from overseas, right? The individuals, they're managing anywhere from $10-15 million to $30 million, and one of them will buy property wherever he likes, wherever he feels, and he doesn't really have to report. Because they don't audit him, they just feel safe. The people abroad just feel confident, and they trust this individual. Albeit this individual back in China, that's one of the leaders of one of the syndicates. He was a practicing lawyer there, and they trust him, and they've handed over the money, and he's sitting on $30 million, and he's buying homes in. What is the last one? But in Thorn Lee, he's buying homes over towards the around Eastwood, Killara. He's got a home in Killara, which he Airbnbs, which is crazy stuff. But he can do that shit because he's got the money.
Yeah, interesting. And talking about more crazy stuff, of course, as we said earlier on, the. Mainstream media are on about January being weird. This was actually quite amusing, but I think you called it a bit of BS.
Yeah, mate. Look, call it for what it is. It's BS. And look, again, Sweeney should know better than to just rely on the Tom Panos index for the temperature of property and. Look, at the end of the day, there are a couple of things that number of things that we can bring out even just from the first couple of paragraphs. First of all, she's relying on one agent or one auctioneer to then all of a sudden there's a surge of listings coming on because allegedly he's booked out at the end of the month with auctions. He's got no more room to take on auctions because he calls auctions on the weekend and that's how he gauges the rest of the Sydney market. Look, follow his advice or follow his points all you want or his index all you want, but there's a lot more to it in the property market. So look, at the end of the day, as I said in that tweet, in that post, I said, look, there's a lot more to this story, and Sweeney should have, she calls herself a property reporter for the AFR. She should have done a little bit more research and dug a little bit further, deeper, and asked a few other agents why they feel that that certain vendors, or why are they pushing their vendors to get on the market a lot, a lot earlier. Or towards the end of January, when they would otherwise not. And it's simple, you know. It comes down to a number of things. One of them is obviously the you've got the Australia Day long weekend, so you've got a bit of a squeeze there in terms of really getting, you know, kicking off. People still in that holiday mode, you know, not back at school yet mode. But on top of that, you've got the what we know as the Chinese New Year, or the Spring Festival, comes in early weeks of February, and they'll kick on until mid-February, and they really want to, they don't want to miss on that, you know, on that audience in order to, you know, to sell. So if they were thinking of going on market, they're saying, well, it's better for you to go on market before or towards the end of January than it is to go on market, you know, at the end of February, for because you're going to lose that, you're going to lose that that Asian audience that's going to, you know, perhaps pay more for the property, and the people are going to still be on holiday mode. You know, I would have expected something along those lines if she dug a little bit deeper, and that's what I'm saying. And the other thing is when you look at Tom's auction, the auctions that he calls, it's predominantly around areas or his contract at a lot. Because a lot of the Asian real estate agents like Tom. I mean, he's a character. I've referred him some jobs, some work for him to call for agents to use him, because he's good at in his craft of calling auctions, and he knows how to squeeze people on the day. But yeah, that's one thing. But the other thing, Martin, is in the second part. In the first part, you know, it says that they're talking, she's sort of in a way in the first two paragraphs, she contradicts herself in a way, because she's saying in her view, or from the alleged research that she's done, she feels that the property market's still going to rise, but rise slowly, but because it's only going to rise slowly, therefore it's convincing people to list the properties on market. I mean, if you feel that the market's going to rise, albeit rise slowly, well, what's the urgency, right? I don't know. That's just me, man. That's just me. What's the urgency?
Yeah, well, you expect logic, but you don't always get it. I sometimes think that some of these articles are written just for the sake of writing an article. So I don't put much weight to them at all, frankly, these days. Although there was another one which I was actually a little bit more interested in, because it confirms what we've been saying with regard to the question of construction. So developers expect to spend less to build less houses despite rising demand. And of course, that sounds a little familiar.
Again, look, I'm just so happy for 2024. You know, even Sky News are watching our podcast again. And they need to subscribe. I don't know whether they're giving you some Patreon feedback, Martin, but they should be, because they're getting a lot of stuff from, we're ahead of the curve. Look, and this is probably what our insider was saying, and this is what we were saying at the beginning of last year, that the cost of construction was only going to increase. It wasn't going to decrease, no matter how many people you brought into the country to cater for the demand in the construction industry. We said that the people that are coming in are not interested in working in the construction industry. The majority aren't interested in working there at all. They've got other ideas and other plans than what the other worlds the government would have. And materials were going to continue to increase. The other thing that you've also got to think about, which I've been talking to some architects over the last couple of weeks, is, you know, name me a builder or a developer, name me anybody that's, you know, that ends up charging, that's charging, let's say, you know, for example, $100 per unit, to then, go back to what they were charging in 2019, which may have been $65 per unit. Who wants to go back to those? Like, once you've tasted that blood, once you've tasted, you don't want to go back, right? You just don't want to go back. It'll be hard for them to go back. Well, apart from the fact that there are other compelling issues that are going to have been affecting the construction industry, the NCC, BASICS, and now you've got this looming weight that's over the new builds, or anything that's really not going to have a kitchen in place post June of this year. You've got the engineered stone. That's they're either going to go into granite marble or porcelain. I mean, they're talking all sorts of things. Whichever way you look at it, the alternatives are going to be costlier. They're going to be less resilient than the current. Yes, it's a great move in the direction of health, but I think they could have tackled this a lot differently. Silica's found in the beach in the sand. Silica's found where when you're mowing your lawns and you go over a sandstone, and then your blades hit the sandstone, and you've got a spray of that dust, that contains silica. Obviously, it's not as deadly as the one that's in the it's in the engineered stone, but they could have tackled this a little bit differently, but for the strong lobby group that the natural stone people, natural stone suppliers have. This is the path that they've taken. It's going to cost. We're going to go, let's say, for example, from an average, $6,000-$7,000Kincha bench top and splashback on 20 mil, to effectively paying $15,000 for the equivalent in the alternate products, and nothing fancy. But one of the things that they haven't spoken about, or I'm sure somebody's going to bring it to their attention, it could be you, Martin, is that in some of the granite, in a lot of the granite, I'm told by Bob the Builder, our insider over there, I'm told that a lot of the cheaper granites, the veins in the granite that you see contain asbestos. So how are you gonna deal with that? So there's a lot of issues, a lot of changes that haven't been thought right through, so it's only gonna get worse. And on top of that, we're gonna, as we said, just before Christmas, we said that there'll only be, there'll be a lot less than what got built, a lot less properties than what got built in 2023, being built or completed in 2024. And now they're throwing figures around of 95,000 at best, which is a lot less than the 250 average that we're supposed to be, 250,000 on average that we're supposed to be building each year to meet the target.
That's right, and those migration numbers are still very high, and demand is high too. But you had a chance of sitting back and just reflecting on 2024. I love this social media post of yours, looking as though you're just deeply reflective on what's going on. But you had a few predictions.
Yeah, look, if people go to my Twitter page, they'll see I've pinned that. I've got Dusty and I've got I think we've got about 18 or so already, or 14, something like that. But yeah, look, they can read my predictions for 2024, with regards to the market, mainly around Sydney. I've got some interesting ones in there as well. I'm of the opinion, prediction number six, I'm of the opinion that either Trump gets taken out or Biden gets taken out. I'm sort of swaying towards Biden getting taken out, and he'll get taken out as a hero, and which is going to affect the 2024 election. So all sorts of things can happen. There's I know it's more of a knowing and seeing where the industry is moving, that a lot of the independents are going to be joining, going back to join the major franchise groups, because they can't handle the not having the incomes, and the way to save costs or save outgoings is by obviously going there. There was, a huge move from 2013, 2015, to leave the major franchises and go and set up yourself, you're on your own as independent. But now I think that is we're going to trend back on that. So I've got I'm even pre one of the predictions there. I'm predicting that our mate Parapower is going to buy. I reckon he'll be buying towards the end of the first quarter, second quarter, maybe. There'll be too much pressure on him. That's a prediction number 12. So I've got some funny ones and I've got some serious ones, and the rest are really, around the stuff that we've been talking, and the just following the trends of what we've been seeing over the last 12 months, and what the people, what the groups are saying as to what they want to do in 24. So obviously a lot of it hinges on which way the numbers stack up. And look, I know there's going to be a lot of pressure from even from the podcast that you put on, the other videos that you put on about your 5 reasons why the property market won't increase. But the counter to that, Martin, is just keep on pulling that migration lever, because we love those following.
Yeah, well, it's, I made two shows, right? And it was quite interesting. 5 reasons why property prices will go up this year, and 5 reasons why property prices might go down this year. And of the two, it's quite interesting that the one about prices going down had a significantly larger viewing than the price rise going up. But I also had quite a few people who said, "See, and you've changed your tune." And I said, "Well, actually, you've got to understand there are these two sets of levers, right? There's levers pushing prices up, there's levers pushing prices down, and it's a question of how these two things interact. And how they interact is going to be determined much more by local factors than actually anything else." So, trying to make an overall prediction is always difficult. But I do point people to your Twitter, or I should say X, and there we'll check those predictions off at the end of the year, right, and see how many came true. But I do think that the numbers one about lack of supply of new property. I remember, of course, Albo's looking to, a million plus properties over the next few years. Well, the foundations are just not being laid for that. So, builders are actually not building. They're not prepared to trim back their margins. Governments will be throwing more money at this. I'm expecting more first-time buyer bribes to try and get people into the market, to try and sort of, do that ahead of the election. I'm expecting the migration numbers not to come down as fast as people were expecting, which means that more demand there. So, demand is quite strong. We've also got quite a few people who have not yet bought and who want to buy and are thinking, well, if I don't buy now, will I ever be able to buy? And of course, as prices drift higher, then that's another issue. And the other factor, of course, is will they tighten or loosen the lending standards? Because the debt to income ratios are still very high, but now people are actually talking about maybe they'll reduce the buffers and reduce the amount of equity you need to be able to put in to buy. Now, if those things happen, that will be another incentive to drive prices higher. So there are some very powerful levers out there which suggest that prices could rise, but I also think there are some issues that would suggest that maybe prices will fall, because of course affordability is off the scale in a bad way, and cash flow is bad as well. So it's a really interesting year, and we'll watch and wait. But let's look at the numbers before we go, Edwin, because the numbers are the key, aren't they?
They are. So it comes back to Sydney again, where, as we said earlier, we're tracking at the beginning of last year. We got 12,856 on market, 5,364 freestanding homes, and almost on par with apartments on market. The land hasn't really gone up that much. It's gone up a lot over the last 6 months in Melbourne, however. We'll see. We'll obviously take that on a week by week screenshot of that and see how see how we track and move along. We've got Melbourne, almost twice as many properties on market than Sydney, but we can see the pain that they're going through, and you know what, you know, the investors mainly wanting to get out. You've got 16,000 homes, just over 16,000 homes on market, in comparison to 5,364 that we've got in Sydney. And again, we've spoken about the many reasons why you've got your homes that are just not sustainable, and a lot of them, I dare say, are in the fringes of Melbourne, where you've got a lot of subdivisions that went on, and a lot of Sydney siders and other investors, you know, lobbed in, 2019, 2018, 2019, and parked a lot of money there. When the WeChat chatter has called it, let's get out of Melbourne. Yeah, those numbers surged as well. Brisbane's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on, because those numbers are shockingly low. They're the lowest numbers I've seen on record, ever since day dot that I can remember. That's, you know, you've only got 1,469. And again, let's remind our audience, Martin, that these are, I don't make this shit up. This is from the domain portal that they have, and a lot of the reports that you hear from AFR talking about surging numbers and this and that. I mean, AFR connected with domains, so I don't know where they get their numbers from, but we're pulling them from the portal. The interesting one is that we'll keep an eye on, particularly since Sweeney's first article for the year got put out. We'll see what happens with the auction numbers. Last week, I think there was only three auctions in Queensland last week. And this week, they're sort of time to tick up. You know, the agents are coming back on deck. But no signs of that. But if people were thinking of selling early, that would have, I believe we would have seen a lot more. That should have been in the hundreds at least, but not in the tens. So that's the upcoming Saturday. There's not a lot on from what we can see. But we'll obviously get a better idea over the next couple of weeks and see where, how truthful Tom was to Sweeney or to write that article in the AFR. Rentals, they've been going up and down. They've come back up again from 2 weeks ago, obviously the natural thing about rentals, you don't really want to really, as a property manager, you don't really want to disturb the tenants that are, albeit they may be vacating the next week or two. You don't want to be having open house inspections during the holidays, and it's just rude. It's just not on. So they get taken off, and now they're coming back on. That is going to be one of the also indicators as to see what the sellers do, Martin, because if there's no rentals for the sellers to go to, in the interim, in case they can't find a property, particularly in the areas that they want to live in, well, they're going to stay put, and hopefully the extension of the geopolitical what's happening globally, geopolitical events. In my view, I'm still, as of today, of the opinion that, you know, that people are going to claim up, and they're not going to really put their properties on the market until perhaps, when we hit spring again.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And the rental story is one of ups and downs, as you say, particularly down over the holiday period, but now beginning to pick up. I'm also getting a lot of in my surveys, a lot of renters looking to buy or to move somewhere cheaper to rent. So there's a couple of different drivers there, because people can't afford the rents they've currently got, and there's still quite a lot of upward momentum in terms of the cost of rental accommodation, and many investors are having to put their rents up because their mortgage costs are going up. Particularly interestingly, those that actually use the agents to manage the property. So there seems to be a little bit of a new year resolution. The agents are now saying we're going to put the rents up again, so I think we're going to see a further uptick in terms of the way that rents are going to rise, which is going to put more pressure on the rental sector, which again puts more pressure more broadly on the market. So it's going to be an interesting year. We'll be watching those numbers.
Yeah, Matt, the rental numbers for Melbourne, It's interesting how you've got really high numbers, and this is why I say that a lot of investment properties have gone are the ones that have gone over to the for sale ledger, as opposed to what some people being saying that it's owner occupiers. They're in a lot of pain because you look at the rental figures, you look at the rental numbers. They've only got 9,867,000 rental properties. Not much, you know. It's not a lot. It's only what? It's only, let's say, you know, nine just over 1,000 more rental, you know, no, over 1,000 less rental properties on the market than what we have in Sydney. So this is why a lot of investors are not putting their properties back up on the rental market. They just want to sell. And yeah, that's so you can see how the Melbourne is acting totally different to Sydney. And there's a lot of other things going in the background, as we've said before, with the Chinese Asian investors. They can't do what they do with properties locally. They can't, you know, travel over there and get the cash, you know, room rents, you know, every other week. So this is, yeah, it's yeah, two different markets, two opposing. It's quite interesting the dynamics there.
Yeah, well, I agree. And a lot of the stuff that's coming on in Melbourne is ex-investment properties. That's quite clear now. So expect to see even lower numbers of available properties to rent in the Melbourne area because of it. So watch that space. And as I come to the end of the show, Edwin, the first real tip for the new year.
Yeah, the first tip is really looking broadly at the cost to renovate, what's happening, the changes. Obviously, with regard to the you know, engineered stone, and what the costs are, what the industries are talking about, the stonemasons, the suppliers of bench tops, the kitchen suppliers. So they're in a bit of a tailspin, but they're already starting to pump the price. So if you're thinking of renovating, if you were thinking about upgrading your bathrooms and your kitchens. And that was on the cards, you know, towards late last year. I recommend jumping now, going now because people aren't going to wait until you know, June. They're not stocking up. The orders have, you know, stopped taking orders because you don't want to be the wholesaler, you know, holding on to, you know, 450 slabs of engineered stone in your warehouse, and that you literally got to pay more money than what they cost you to dump them. And it's not something like what they did with James Hardie, where you know when the fibre cement was banned that had asbestos, you know, and builders, you know, bought the sheets in the truckload and stored them in the garages, and they were still building with the stuff. Yeah, well into the late 80s, you know, in some cases in the early 90s, because they had so much of it because they literally got them for free. So unfortunately you can't do that with this stone because it's just too bulky, too big, too heavy, too cumbersome. And yeah, so I would, and if you're starting to make the transition, just to give our audience an understanding, the machine that cuts the granite or the natural stone for the kitchen bench tops, if you buy the Italian machine, if you import an Italian machine to cut it, so that they can, you know, stonemason can supply that to the kitchen manufacturers, that machine is worth anything between 350,000 and 500,000, right? To import one from China, it'll cost you anywhere between, you know, landed and installed, probably around 250,000 to 300,000. So it's not small change to change your operation from the way that they're doing things now, with a wet grinder, with a wet cutter, which is, you know, you pay $30,000, $40,000 to cut it, you know, the way that they've been doing it presently. So now having to step up to, 300,000 or 500,000 to just to stay in the industry. Hence why, obviously there's going to be less players on in the game, and supply and demand. And things are gonna, you're gonna pay three times as much. And if you try to go for the other materials, they're gonna be softer. My understanding from what I've been told from the industry there, the industry groups that I've been talking to, the materials are a lot softer, untested. There's gonna be a lot of recalls. And you could have a new fancy swanky $50,000, $60,000 kitchen. With a bench top that's buckling, and the person that installed it went, they just shrugged their shoulders and said, "Well, not my problem. Told you it was going to be softer," and blamed the New South Wales government. So if you're thinking about it, if you've been pondering on it, bite the bullet and do it now.
Yeah, and the other point to make there, Edwin, is that the international shipping container costs have gone up again dramatically because of the fact that the the Red Sea is now out of action, and therefore the Suez Canal isn't working, and I think the Panama Canal has also got problems too because of drought. So shipping costs are going to rise. That means, of course, imports are going to be more expensive, and that's going to put more upward pressure on the cost of building materials as we go through the next few months. So another reason to strike early. If you're going to do something, I would suggest, because I think it's going to get way, way, way more expensive, which, by the way, also might translate to higher inflation and all those other things too. So, interesting times, Edwin. I look forward to next week where we'll explore the numbers again and see what's going on. There's always so much to talk about, but appreciate your insights today, and we'll do it all again next week.
Most definitely, man. See you next week.
See ya. Take care. Bye-bye.